Garrett Edelstein here, your celeb expert and your celeb savant. Celeb Savant is a weekly entertainment show. We have long-form career retrospective type interviews with celebrities, singers, actors, and industry experts. On this episode of Celeb Savant, I'll be speaking to Fee Wabel. Fee is the lead singer and songwriter of the San Francisco band The Tubes, and Wabel has also worked with other acts including Toto, Richard Marx, and Billy Sherwood. Up next on Celeb Savant, we've got Fee Wabel. Fee, thank you so much for your time and joining me today on the Celeb Savant podcast. Tell me, where are you in the world? How are you? What's happening with your life?
I am in Los Angeles. And my life is pretty good, boy. I got no complaints here. We're back working again. And after the long holiday, the long pandemic holiday. And so we've been working, and we've got a bunch of shows coming up. We're going to be doing some shows opening for the B-52s coming up in October. And we're going to go back east in eastern United States to do some headlining shows. And then actually next summer in the UK, we're going to go on tour supporting the Hollywood Vampires.
Oh, wow. That's interesting.
With Johnny Depp and Alice Cooper and Joe Perry. So that's pretty exciting. So we have got a lot of gigs coming up and a number of tours in the works. So it's all good. I'm good. I'm healthy, and I have a lovely wife, and we have a lovely little home here in Los Angeles, and I have a beautiful dog, and we go to the park every day. And so I've got no complaints out here.
I like what you said, that you still get excited after all these years being in the industry, which is amazing. Oh. Because, you know, a lot of people could potentially become blasé. Oh, you know, it's another opening act with another artist. How do you keep that excitement going for you?
I mean, I have always loved being in the band and singing. And my mother was a singer. And so my whole life I've been singing. And especially now, I mean, after having 2 years, almost 2 years out of the business with the pandemic, you know, I thought, oh my God, I mean, well, I may never get to perform again. And so that has even enhanced my excitement to get back on the road and to get back into it. And we, you know, this is my life. We actually, the band got together 50 years ago in 1972 in San Francisco. And this marks our 50th year, if you can believe that. And we're still, 4 out of 5 of us are still original members. And, you know, and I think, you know, we don't kill ourselves. I mean, I'm not getting back in the bus and doing 10 nights in a row. You know, we usually work long weekends, you know, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. We fly into a region, we do 3 or 4 shows, and then we fly home. And so it's the best of both worlds. You have that exciting touring life, and then you get back home and you have your home and your wife and your dog and your backyard. And you know, it's really great.
First of all, Mazel Tov for 50 years. That's completely amazing.
Oh, thank you.
I want to take it all the way back to 1972 or pre that time. It's obviously a condensed version. Tell us about the story of The Tubes. How you guys met, what decided you to get into music space. Tell us your story.
Okay, well, the condensed version. I grew up in Phoenix, Arizona, as did all of us. We're all from Phoenix, Arizona. And when I was a young man, I used to, this is the first band and the only band I've ever been in. I wasn't a band guy. I used to go to clubs in Phoenix and watch bands. And Roger Steen and Prairie Prince had a band in Arizona called the Red, White, and Blues Band, and with a bass player, a gentleman named David. And what happened was I ended up dropping out of college and moving up to the mountains in northern Arizona. And I kind of, you know, took Timothy Leary's advice, turn on, tune in, drop out. And I just got tired of college. I got tired of working. And so I moved to a little town in northern Arizona called Cottonwood. And I went to work for a cowboy, and I lived on a cattle ranch, and I played cowboy. And I knew how to ride because I grew up on a horse. My dad was a riding instructor in Scottsdale, so I always had horses, and I knew how to ride. And I got a job at this cattle ranch, and I started riding the range. And one of the other guys that worked there, his name was Michael. He met a young lady, and he was going to get married, and they were going to have a wedding at the ranch. And he said, "Do you know any bands that will come up and play at our wedding?" And I said, "Oh, well, I know I got some friends in this band called the Red, White, and Blues Band out of Phoenix." And he said, "Oh, could you get them to come up and play at the wedding?" And so I got a hold of Roger, and they said, "Oh, sure, we'll come up." And they came up to the ranch, and they played at this wedding. And that was in the summer of 1969. And they were about to move to San Francisco because Prairie Prince got a scholarship. He was an artist, and he got a scholarship to the San Francisco Art Institute, a full scholarship. So they were going to move to San Francisco, and Prairie was going to go to the Art Institute. And they asked me if I wanted to be their roadie and do it. You know, they had an equipment truck and all their gear, and they were going to drive it to San Francisco. And they said, "Will you drive the truck to San Francisco and be our roadie?" And I was, you know, I had been playing cowboy for a couple of years, and it's not quite as glamorous as you might think. Yeah. And I was pretty tired of riding the range. And I said, "Okay." So I bailed out and I drove the truck to San Francisco, and we moved to San Francisco in early 1970. And the band worked, and I was the roadie until about 2 years later, when another band from Arizona, Bill Spooner's band called the Beans, they also moved to San Francisco, and we decided we would combine the two bands because we didn't really have enough work for either of our bands to survive. So they had some gigs and we had some gigs. And then the bass player quit, Roger's bass player quit, and ended up moving to Hawaii. So they had no bass player. And so we said, "Okay, let's join Bill's band." And so Bill already had guitar, bass, keyboards, drums. So Roger and Prairie joined the band, and there was two guitar players and two drummers. And I'm kind of left in the cold because they already had two roadie guys. And I said, "Well, you know, I had sung. My mother was a singer. And like I said, and I sang all the way through high school, and I did musical comedy, and I was in a high school choir group." And I said, "You know, I can sing. I'm a pretty good singer." And so they said, "Okay, you can sing background vocals." Okay. So I got in the band being a background vocalist, and I sang. They kept telling me, "You sing too loud. You sing too loud. You're supposed to blend in. You're a background vocalist." And I said, "Well, I don't want to be a background vocalist. I want to be the lead singer. You're the guitar player. You play guitar. I'll be the lead singer." So I became the lead singer.
Oh, wow.
And then that was around 1972. And then we played around town for two or three more years in San Francisco. And then we got a deal. We got a record deal at A&M in 1975. We got a record deal at A&M Records, and we made our first album in 1975. And then, you know, we went on from that. We made five records at A&M, and then we went to Capitol Records, and we met David Foster, and we made three records at Capitol, and had some hits with David Foster on our first album, Completion Backward Principle. With David, we had a hit with Talk to You Later and Don't Want to Wait. And we had never had any kind of acceptance at radio. We were a theater band, and we had a big, elaborate theatrical show, and we were pretty much known for our live theatrical performance. And we had met this guy, Kenny Ortega. He was, at that time, he was a choral dancer, mm-hmm. and he wanted to become a choreographer. And he came to us, and we said, "Great, you know, help us choreograph all of this theatrics." And so he became our choreographer and became our theatrical director, actually. And he put together all of our big theatrical shows. And of course, as you may know, he's gone on to fame and fortune with directing movies and High School Confidential and just on and on and on. And so, and that's how it all got started. And here we are, gosh, almost 50 years later. And I mean, the band is trimmed down now. So there's only a 5-man band. And 4 of us are original guys, and I'm still doing a lot of the theatrics and costume changes and characters that we did in the past. Yep. And we're still working, and we're, you know, I'm in heaven. I love it.
That's amazing. Such a glorious and story. I read up that you were in the section of Xanadu for that song Dancing.
Right.
Kenny, did he choreograph that, or was he involved in that movie?
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
Oh, yeah. Kenny Ortega, he was choreographing the whole thing, yes. Even Gene Kelly's movement, and put that whole show together where the two stages merged together,
yes.
With the 40 singers and yes. Us. And yeah, that was all Kenny. It was all Kenny.
I mean, I don't know what the cynics are about. I love that movie. I watched it 1,000 times. So to know that you were on it is amazing. I was very sad to hear about Miss Newton-John's passing a few weeks ago. I was supposed to be interviewing her for the show, and we just didn't get around to it. So that was just a sad note and recognition to her. Tell us about your creative process. Are you still recording new music, or are your live shows basically, or, you know, your repertoire of music that you've released?
Well, the Tubes live shows are mostly our hits and our favorites that the fans want to hear. But a number of, I just made a solo album called Fee Waybill Rides Again, which is my third solo album I did with Richard Marx. And Richard Marx is my best friend. And we've been best friends for now 38 years, 39 years. And I'm godfather to his sons. Oh. And he lives here in Los Angeles now, and I see him all the time. He's on tour right now in Germany. Back. I just talked to him, or I just texted him the other day, and he's about to start his German tour. He's been out for a few weeks in Europe. And so Roger has a solo album. And so we're kind of, I live in LA, and everybody else lives up in the Bay Area still, San Francisco area. And so, you know, we get together for shows and concerts, and but I'm kind of, I mean, we haven't actually sat down. We have a number of songs actually that in the can,
yeah.
You know, over the years, we've got 4 or 5 songs, but it's difficult to get together. It's difficult to find time to record, and everybody's got a life of their own, you know, and but I've done. I just released this record, and I'm very proud of it. Richard helped me. Richard produced it. Richard and I wrote all the songs, and he's appearing on it on a number of songs, mostly background vocals. And actually, we're going to put together, I've never done a solo show, and Richard offered himself and his band to me to put together a few solo shows in December here in Los Angeles. I've never done it before. I've never, after all these years, I've only done the Tubes. But I'm going to do a Fee Waybill Rides Again solo show at a couple of local clubs here in Los Angeles, which I'm pretty excited about. And I'm going to use Richard's band, and Richard is going to help me and sing background with me. And so that's exciting. I've got that coming up in December. And, you know, we've got, like I said, we've got next summer, we're going to go to the UK and open for the Hollywood Vampires. And we've always done well in the UK. And, you know, we've done a number of tours there over the years. And so we got a exciting next year coming up.
It's amazing. But I mean, you got 50 years of music in the can. So there's so many songs to choose from your repertoire. So maybe it's okay sometimes not to get the new releases out, because you've got them so you can carry on. But the fact that you're doing the solo work is also amazing, and allows you to play in a different sort of space and a different sort of stage to what you're used to. Are you a bit nervous for those solo performances? Or
Well, I'm a little, I have to say, I'm a little apprehensive, because I've never done a solo show before. Yeah. And but Richard assures me, he goes, "Oh, don't worry about it. You know, we'll get together with my band and we'll rehearse and we'll get it totally together and we'll figure out what the songs are, what the set list is, and I'm going to do some of my favorite songs, a Roy Orbison song and a Frank Sinatra song and some other material that I would never do with the Tubes band." Yeah. And so I'm excited about it. I'm really excited. I mean, I'm still learning. I mean, I'm taking vocal lessons right now from a gentleman here in Los Angeles who's really, really well known here. Yeah. In town. And he's been teaching me how to sing more relaxed because, okay, you know, I'm so in the Tube show, I'm so hyper and I'm running around and I'm changing clothes and I'm squealing and screaming and singing all these songs that are really high. And he says, no, he's teaching me how to relax my throat and my chest and how to breathe and how to reach those high notes without forcing it, without tensing up. And I've just started going back to yoga again with my wife. She's in terrific shape and has been doing yoga for years and years and years. And I used to do it with her years ago, back when Bikram Chowdhury was teaching yoga here. And
yeah.
And that whole thing kind of blew up. And I hadn't gone back to yoga for years.
Yeah.
And, but I've started again, and I'm so stiff. We just... Sunday night, and yeah. Oh my God, just an hour of a stretching class was just,
oh yeah,
brutal. Oh, it was impossible. But little by little, I'm getting, you know, after 2 years, you know, I thought my career was over with the pandemic. Yeah. I thought nobody's ever going to get together again to listen to music. And I kind of just, I don't know, I just kind of got depressed and I stopped doing everything. And that was a mistake. So now I'm you know, turning it around and getting it all back together.
Reinvigorating yourself, which is so cool. I was laughing because my colleagues, you know, I'm a loud person. I've got lots of energy. I'm always moving around. And that's just me. And my colleagues were saying earlier, calm down. Let's go. So that's why I was laughing, because I have that sort of in a different environment, because I'm a very much an exciting, loads of energy person. And so it's cool to hear that I'm also a different way, but we get both getting told to calm down a bit. So
let's relax, and it'll still work. Everything will still work if you relax. You get too excited and everything tenses up. And that just, and especially in your throat, you tense up like that and that closes it off.
Yeah.
You know, and you know, you want it to be open, and you want your breath to that one of the things that my vocal coach had told me, he says, when you tense up and you try to hit that high note, that's called glottal breathing.
Okay.
And if you just relax and you let the breath pull your vocal cords together, that's called Bernoulli breathing.
Oh.
And that doesn't slam your vocal cords together. And when you keep doing that, they get strained and they get inflamed. And then pretty soon you lose your voice. And so he said, just keep doing the Bernoulli breathing and relax. And you'll still, because I worry, you know, a lot of these songs are really high. And I've always been, I'm a tenor, and I've been very fortunate with my voice. I'm still able to hit all the high notes that David Foster put in there. You know, he loved the high stuff. And so it's just a whole new way for me to learn to sing.
Well, what amazing is that, you know, life is a journey and we're always learning. So that's amazing that you're still learning and are willing to do so.
Yeah.
I'm going to put you on the spot. I love playing this game. My recipients don't always. So now it's not necessarily your favorite, but your five go-to or top five songs by other artists. And
top five songs by other artists.
Like I said, it doesn't have to be your favorite, just your first five that come to mind in this moment.
Okay. Well, I guess number one has to be Purple Haze. When I was a kid in Scottsdale, I saw Jimi Hendrix in Los Angeles, and I brought back that album, Are You Experienced? And I brought it back, and I actually took it to the radio station in Phoenix, Arizona. The DJ's name was Tony Evans. I still remember this. And I said, Tony, this is unbelievable. This guy is unbelievable. You have to, you know, and so and then, okay. So another one is, well, any song by the Beatles. Okay. Any song by the Beatles. When I started high school, the Beatles came out, and that just, I went crazy. I went, oh my God. That's what I think originally, that's what got me hooked on music and wanting to be in a band so bad, you know, and I just sang Beatles songs all the time, and it's amazing. The Beatles are unbelievable. Yeah. And they're unbelievable. And okay, so what else?
So you got three more.
Three more. Well, the first song I ever sang was a Roy Orbison song. The first time I ever, years ago, the band had a gig and they didn't have an opening act. And I used to play when I was a cowboy up in the, I used to sit with my acoustic guitar and sing just to the desert. You know, it was a desert. And I would play my guitar and sing Roy Orbison songs.
Okay.
And so when they said, will you be the opening act? Just sing your Roy Orbison song, which was called Crying.
Oh,
Crying,
yeah.
By yes. Orbison. Mm-hmm. And that just killed me. And I love that. And so, okay, four, I would have to say is anything by the Foo Fighters.
Okay.
Dave Grohl is a friend of mine, and we actually met in a costume store in Los Angeles, and I was looking for Tubes costumes, and he was going to go to an 80s party, and he was looking for parachute pants. And I recognized him in the store, and I walked up to him and I said, Dave, oh my God, I'm such a huge fan of the Foo Fighters. We became friends.
Oh,
and
cool.
So I'm trying to remember the name of their first hero, Times Like These. I mean, there's so many great Foo Fighters songs. And then I guess number five, and not to be relegated to last in line, is Richard Marx. And I've written a number of songs with him, and a few of them have had commercial success. Gosh, we've written together, I don't know, hundreds of songs.
Oh, wow.
I've had songs on every one of his records. And let's see, Right Here Waiting For You is a song he wrote, which I love that song. And Nothing Left Behind Us is a song I wrote with him that was pretty big time. I can't remember how high it went, but Nothing Left Behind Us was a song. His father, his name was Dick Marx, and his father was a keyboard player and a jazz keyboard player in Chicago, where he grew up. And he wrote jingles also. He wrote the Double Mint Gum jingle. And then when Richard and I became friends, Richard and I and his mother, Ruth, would sing jingles for him and sing the latest version of the Double Mint Gum jingle. They kept revising it, changing it. And so I became, you know, really close with his father. And then his father died in a car accident, unexpectedly.
Oh, wow.
In a car accident. And then I went back, and he was still living in Chicago at the time. And I went back to Chicago for the funeral. And my father had just died recently also from an injury he got in a car accident.
Okay.
And then he broke his hip. And then when they examined him, they found out he had a giant lung cancer.
Oh, wow.
And they said, well, we can't do the lung cancer thing until your hip heals. And then he died before the hip ever healed. Just the cancer took over. So we wrote this song called Nothing Left Behind Us about our fathers and about how we were so close to our fathers that there was nothing that we hadn't talked about. There was nothing we hadn't said, nothing left behind us. And so I guess that would be song number the last song.
So I love these stories, like all these songs, so relevant and so true for so many years. And putting it out there that we will be seeing, meeting each other either in America or South Africa. The podcast is listened to throughout the world. And you, okay, your final message to our listening audience, what would you like to say?
Well, first of all, I really want to go to Africa. I'm just, my whole life, I wanted to go to Africa, and I have to go to, I want to come to South Africa to see all the animals, but I mostly want to go to the Virungas to see the mountain gorillas. And I was very distressed to hear that they were offering oil leases in the Virungas, the Congo was, or Zaire, or one of those countries that are surrounding the Virunga mountain range. And because I guess they've put some kind of restriction on oil leases here in the United States, and they piped up and said, oh, well, you can come over here and drill for oil. And oh my God, I just, and hopefully they'll stop all that.
Yes.
I hope, and I'm going to help in any way I can, but I think we're already planning it. My next birthday, we're going to go to Africa. We've got to go to Africa. I'm just, I can't leave this world without going to Africa. And I wanted to say finally to, you know, don't give up on your dream. Okay. Just don't give up. Cause that was my dream. When the Beatles came out, my dream was, oh my God, I want to sing music. I want to be in a band, and I want to be a singer in the band. And I actually tried out for 3 or 4 bands, you know, before the Tubes in high school. And they went, oh no, sorry. You know, in fact, I tried out for one band and they said, what song do you want to play? And I said, Purple Haze by Jimi Hendrix. And they went, okay, no, we don't do that. No, you're out. We don't do that kind of thing. We're a kind of a mellow. And I said, okay, well, whatever. And, but I kept the dream alive.
Yes.
And unbeknownst to me, you know, the dream came true without me even trying. I mean, I didn't ask to become the roadie and move to San Francisco. Yeah. And I didn't know what was going to happen. And actually, I'm working on a book. My wife and I are working on a book of my life. It's called Fee Waybill's Guide to an Unknown Trail. And okay, so it was kind of my life. It was an unknown trail. All I had was the dream. I didn't know how it was going to happen. And out of the circumstances just combined to put me in the front of the stage and enabled me for all these years to live my dream. So just don't give up. Okay. Just don't give up. That's all I ask. You know, it'll happen.
As Mr. Fee Waybill says, keep that dream alive, keep focusing on it, and let it manifest. So this is Slebs Fund signing out with Mr. Waybill.
Thanks, Barrett.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.